following announcement has been paid for by the Tin Bell World Order.
Tin Bell Pod is taking over wrestling podcast.
Yeah, you want a war? You got one.
That's why we will f*** you in the f*** in your mother goddamn face as she looks me in the f***ing eye.
Jesus, Jake, maybe take it down a notch?
Yeah, man, keep it light. It's a fun promo.
All right, fine.
The following announcement has been paid for by the Tin Bell World Order.
Tin Bell Pod is taking over wrestling podcast.
Yeah, you want a war? You got one.
Jake, that's you.
No, I mean, I get what we're doing, but like, I came up with like really great ideas, and you guys, like, no, thanks, Jake. We're good. You know, we're all right. We got enough great ideas over here. So sure, I mean, you
Jake,
know,
what's we don't hate your ideas.
Yeah, I mean, if you want to tell people you're gonna f*** them and they're f*** until they f***, we'll put it in. It's not a big deal.
All right, you mean it?
Yeah.
All right. Cool.
Yeah, that's good. It's good for business.
The following announcement has been paid for by the Tin Bell World Order.
Tin Bell Pod is taking over wrestling podcast.
Yeah, bitch. You wanted a war? You got one.
That's right.
It's your old pal, the Man Scout here, just wishing a little friendly competition. And thank you for listening to
Tin Bell Pod.
Hello and welcome to Tin Bell Pod. I'm Nick, and the first thing you need to do is tell these people to shut up if you want to hear what I got to say. I'm joined by fellow Tin Bell Pod organization member, Tyler Wood.
Hey, Nick. Thanks for being the only member of the Kids in the Scott Hall.
Jesus Christ.
No, stop. You're not allowed to do puns, all right? You're not allowed. Like, Nick is the only one allowed to do anything of that sort. Like, no, you give him back his sword. You obviously picked up something bigger than what you were allowed to swing around. So
stop. I honestly thought I was going to get cut off after I called you the diamond-studded butt plug of the podcast.
That was far better than what you just did. Like, I want you to go back and listen to that and then be like, oh, that's where I peaked, and then just stop, like, from there on.
And that mystery third man, that voice you're hearing, here, I'll show you how it's done, Tyler. Boy Scouts pays off, badges come true, campfires don't last, but camp guys do. The Man Scout, Jake Manning.
See, that's how it's done. Tyler, did you pay attention? I hope you paid attention.
Yes,
I did. I know the listeners did, and they clearly saw a difference between you and Nick. Just let you know.
So, we have never really had the chance to talk about the good NWO on this show, and, you know, fingers crossed we don't have to again for, you know, a very, 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 very long time. So far for us, it has been like a WWF guy coming in once the angle is like a disaster. They swerve themselves into the NWO. They don't do anything. They get kicked out, put back in. But this part of NWO, this is some serious gourmet shit.
Yeah, these are the cool years. And when Nick says that he's, you know, hoping he doesn't have to cover this ever again for a very long time, he means that because he likes Kevin Nash. Also, too, he knows he would have to do, I don't know, 5 months worth of research if we ever had to do a Hulk Hogan episode. So that's more of why he's like, God, I hope we don't have to ever do this again anytime soon. But yeah, this is where wrestling gets cool, awesome, and amazing. And it will be fun to talk about it today. And Tyler just scratched his head the entire time because he was two when this happened.
Yeah, I'm excited to dive into some of this stuff because, like we were talking about before we started recording on Audacity.
Air, like we're professionals, like we're broadcasting.
Yeah, for the little on-air light went on, we were shooting the breeze. We were talking about revisionist history in wrestling and how me growing up on wrestling, when I did, I got a different view of WCW and the NWO. And, you know, for years, I've only known of them as the guys that went in with creative control and lined their pockets with the profits that eventually drove WCW out of business. You go on to, you know, further research on that, you realize that's mostly bullshit. And it's kind of glossed over, too, from a WWE perspective. Like, you know, the NWO was good, but they... Like, Jake, I think you were talking about it on the A&E stuff. They're basically like, we were always on top. There was never a problem. And it's cool to see the guys that came in and made WCW and, like, wrestling as a whole fucking cool. And it's what sparked, like, that whole late 90s boom of just, like, counterculture, work shoots, Vince Russo, the works.
So while we'll mostly keep this Scott Hall-centric, as that's, you know, who we're covering, I thought it would be fun to just slow down, really dig into like the first year or so of the angle, because this is pure uncut wrestling history. And if you didn't live through it, I don't think it's quite as shocking now to like go back and watch it, because the NWO broke down so many walls as far as pro wrestling storytelling, pro wrestling production, incorporating real life into pro wrestling, that just about every single thing they did was like eventually adapted into the industry standard because it was that good. But at the time, everything they did was like navigating new territory. When we left off Scott Hall part one, he had just left the WWF after not being able to reach a financial agreement with Vince. Ted Turner, however, was tossing bags of money into the air and shooting them down like Yosemite Sam. So Scott inks a deal with WCW, and he's all like, I guess while I'm here, I might as well change pro wrestling at its very core forever. I'm not doing anything else. On May 27th, 1996, on the first ever two-hour episode of Monday Night Nitro, I wrote Raw in the script, but it is Nitro. Scott Hall would show up on WCW TV and fire the first shot in the Monday Night War.
Well, that shows you who won the war, doesn't it, Nick? Your default is Monday Night Raw. Exactly.
Well, what season of Monday Night Nitro is this on Peacock? That's what I want to know. Like, is it
two, right? Season two. I think it'd be season two. Right? They started in 95?
Yeah, I think, 95.
Steve Dahl and the Mahler were pro wrestling at each other when WCW goes to commercial. We come back to a wide shot, and down the stairs, through the crowd, comes a man in a sweet jean vest, toothpick in his mouth. He hops the guardrail, grabs a mic, gets into the ring, and drops that iconic line, "You people know who I am, but you don't know why I'm here."
This is what's beautiful about wrestling at this time, and also being not somebody that, like, who's, I don't know, 96, I'd be 14, 15? Definitely don't have a subscription to The Observer. I know nothing of what's going on backstage contract-wise. And here is Razor Ramon, who I was like jonesing for because WWE TV, because he had that suspension. He was doing a couple jobs out the door, but I didn't know why. I'm like, oh, well, maybe they're just doing something with Razor. Razor's hurt, or maybe Razor will come back. And then all of a sudden I'm watching WCW Nitro, and holy fucking shit, he's walking down to the ring. I mean, I get that wrestlers can leave and go wrestle their places, but I didn't realize he'd left over here. And then for him to say those words, it's like, I don't know what's going on. All I know is I need to watch Nitro as much as possible because Razor could show up at any possible minute. I am the exact fan that they were trying to hook with all of those lines. Somebody that had saw Razor Ramon on WWF television for years and had not been paying attention to the dirt sheets, had no clue, was just a fan of professional wrestling that tuned into professional wrestling at all moments in time that it was on television. And now all of a sudden, a guy who was established, and it wasn't like Vincent came out on TV and like, Razor Ramon wanted more goddamn money, so I kicked his fucking ass out of here and like knew it happened. There was no Twitter. There was no social media to announce that somebody had been released. Nothing. Nada. Just all of a sudden this guy was here. What the fuck is going on? And I'm just sitting there in amazement. We will never get that in professional wrestling. Not even close. I think that's why like people lost their minds as much as they did about Roderick Strong just showing up. Because like, oh, we didn't know his contract expired with NXT. But people kind of knew that, like, well, they hadn't been using him for a while. All his friends are over here, so eventually he's going to go over. So, like, there was a little bit of like, oh, well, that was cool. But for anybody even say it was like a tenth of cool as Scott Hall showing up on WCW Nitro, you would be grossly, grossly wrong.
If you guys had a pencil, and it's a magical pencil, and you can go back and rewrite a specific piece of wrestling history, would you rewrite this so that Scott Hall is not doing the accent when he shows up? Or do you feel like that sold it more?
Sold it more.
Yeah, sold it more.
Sold it more.
Because you think he's Razor.
Mm.
Well, I think he's Cuban. I'm 14, 15 years old. I think he's Cuban.
Did you think Razor was his real name, or do you think that was just like a nickname?
You know what? I didn't give it too much thought. I mean, he was Razor Ramon.
You're like, I don't know how Cubans work. They probably name them.
I mean,
Razor.
I think at 14, I wasn't really for sure if Hulk Hogan wasn't his real name. You know, I might have heard Terry Bollea. Some like adult probably told me that to sound like they were cool because they heard it on TV at some point in time. And I may have been slightly aware that wrestlers had real names other than their character names. Like I said, I'm a 14, 15 year old kid. Guy's name's Razor. Well, maybe his name is Ray Razor or Ray Ramon, you know, or whatever. So his nickname is Razor, but his real name is Ramon because he's Cuban. What the fuck are you talking about? Of course he's Cuban. Look at him.
14, 15 year old kid in Iowa. Have you seen a Latino man in real life at this point?
At this point, that's a good question. Highly doubtful.
Ah, yes.
Very limited exposure. I mean, all has been seen on television, but in real life, probably next to nil.
Spencer asked me a good question when we were, I had some wrestling on, and she's like, did you know Booker T or Booker T Washington first? And I was like, definitely Booker T.
Same.
I think I might have knew Booker T Washington first. I had some very good teachers in elementary. So, sorry, the educational system in Preston Elementary School was better than, I don't know, whatever shitbag North Carolina schools you guys went to. Sorry.
Then at the end of the same Nitro, Scott pops back up to head out to commentary. He tells Eric that we are taking over. Get your best three guys. Try to stop us. Insert the "and here we go" Joker gif. The next week, after the main event between Sting and Lex Luger versus the Steiners, we cut to Bischoff and Bobby Heenan. Scott walks out to confront Eric, and Bobby runs away, and Bobby's selling like the fear of all this is just perfect every single time.
Well, also too, probably didn't tell him what was going to happen. And then one time Brian Pillman grabbed him and like he's had neck surgery like just a few years ago. And now all of a sudden, like this guy who's like, oh, we're going to do some unscripted stuff. And Bobby's like, okay, cool. I'm going to fucking run away because I'm not fucking safe in my work environment. Fuck you. Bye.
Like, hey, Bobby, good job. Good call on that. Made it look real realistic. And he's like, oh,
go fuck yourself.
So Scott's threatening a war. Sting comes over to defend M'lady WCW's honor. Scott throws his toothpick at him. Sting is all like, keep WCW's name
out your fucking mouth.
Slaps him in front of everyone. The 5-0 runs in to break him up. And then Scott lets them know he has a big surprise coming next week. And that brings us to June 10th's episode of Nitro. Again, we cut to Eric and Bobby Heenan. Bischoff is now wearing glasses, which is an old Hollywood trick to show that time has passed and he's a week older.
Shut the fuck up, Mac.
Scott is back out to internet bully Eric. And in walks Kevin Nash, who's all like, this is where the big boys play, huh? What's the dependent clause in that sentence? Big or play or something. Nash, aside from that flub, cuts a really great promo. Bischoff says he'll meet with WCW, get a squad together. And he kind of like implies that it's going to go down at Great American Bash. As we all know, it does not. So at this point, Vince and WWF had seen Big Kev and Scott Hall kind of being Razor and Diesel on their opponent's station, really implying that they worked for WWF. So Vince tries to sue WCW here. I believe they end up giving Vince some sort of Abe Lincoln literature and let him know that you can no longer own humans. And he's like, what? They're not humans. They're puppets.
Get Jerry McDevitt on the phone. I've got a clarification that you can or cannot own human beings. I disagree. What does the Constitution say? Like, no, oh, that's bullshit. Who snuck this in? I thought we were on top of this, McDevitt. That's why I pay you the big bucks so I can own human beings.
We say that to get to June 16th, Make American Bash Great Again. Great American Bash. Hall and Nash come out and they're like, we don't work for WWF. We don't work for Vince. We don't work for WWF. And there's no match on this pay-per-view, but Bischoff does say he'll get his three guys together and they'll face them at July's Bash at the Beach. And then Kevin Nash jackknife powerbombs Bischoff off the stage through a table. Where's your karate at now, you little bitch? You little fucking bitch.
It's violent. Like, him getting powerbombed through there. Somebody who doesn't know how to take a bump just thrown through it. Kudos to Bischoff just being like, I mean, take care of me, Kev. And Kevin's just like, while counting all this money he's gotten. Sure, boss. No fucking problem. I gotcha. And that's about as good as reassurance as you're going to get in a situation like that. But yeah, they had to come out and basically say they don't work for the WWF. And this has been detailed on Bischoff's podcast where they had somebody put run sheets down calling Scott Hall Razor as a nickname. So like there's examples of that. But then Bischoff's like, well, fuck. If you're saying that you're trademarking a character, I should have showed up, you know, clips of Scott doing the Diamond Stud here in WCW as our intellectual property. But I think at that moment in time when you heard that, you were like, okay, oh, they're not coming in WWE, but something's going to fucking happen. I still don't know what's going on. Like, it kind of takes that edge away from the overall big thing. But like, you're like, oh shit, you're still intrigued in the story. The fact that they've just flung a fucking karate champion through, like, the stage and didn't give a solid fuck what happened to him afterwards. Other than, like, as he's throwing him, Kevin Nash is like, sign my check! That's all he heard. It's still pretty cool, but, you know, gets him on the pay-per-view, doesn't give it right away. I think Bischoff also has detailed it many a time. It's about questions, you know, ask questions. And at this moment in time, everybody's asking questions, and we have very little answers of what's happening.
So they're given cease and desists for Hall and Nash to stop using WWF characters on television. I get the Razor Ramon character no longer being allowed. You know, he speaks with an accent, even though he's from Maryland. He's obviously doing something. Was Kevin Nash acting like a truck driver when he was on WCW? Like, what is the... He had a trucker cap on. That's about all I can see. What was he doing in the WWF that made him seem like a truck driver?
Well, he was cool because he was Big Daddy Cool. So anytime he acts cool, Vince feels like he owns it. He's got Jerry McDivitt on it right now, trying to figure out if he could own somebody's coolness. When he saw Austin Powers and stealing his mojo, he's like, that's what I did with Kevin Nash. I own his coolness. I own his mojo. That's mine. His coolness is my IP. I will defend it and inject his coolness into Glenn Jacobs. Simple as that.
So the next night on Nitro, we find out who is going to take on the Outsiders and their mystery third man. And it ends up being Sting, Lex Luger, and the Macho Man Randy Savage. On June 24th, Nitro, Hall and Nash interrupt the main event of Harlem Heat versus Sting and Luger. Scott and Kevin are carrying baseball bats. The cops run in. And this is kind of like a weird point that people bring up, that Hall and Nash held off four of their guys, plus the cops, just the two of them with a bat. So it makes WCW kind of look like shit.
With this, too, I think we should, like, it's crazy. It's less than a month or a little over a month since the curtain call. And things are cooking hard.
Yeah, so fast, yeah.
Well, and see, that's something that I lose context with because obviously I didn't grow up in New York and didn't know the curtain call even happened. Like, the curtain call is something that I hear about when the internet becomes more prominent in my fucking life. So I probably didn't even know really of the timing of that until, like, you just said it right now. I'm like, yeah, you're right. Like, you don't think of it that way, especially if you're my age and you weren't on wrestling message boards or reading The Observer. You don't even realize oh shit, this one thing happened. Everybody was pissed off about these guys going out the door. And now they're on the other program doing all this. And it's like, they look like fucking monsters holding everybody off with baseball bats and kind of pretending like they work for us. Like, this is fucking weird.
Then we get to the Go Home episode, July 1st, 1996, the very last Monday before pro wrestling would change forever. Bischoff is back from his assault. They've beefed up security, but outsmarting WCW, Hall and Nash bought a ticket to sit in the front row. Not only did they buy tickets, they also bought a $9 bag of popcorn and a $14 Coke. So they're already, the outsiders are boosting WCW's ticket sales, their concession percentage, and this is why they're there.
Nick, I hate to break it to you, they actually expensed that because they have an expense account. So actually WCW paid for it, so they didn't make any money off of that whatsoever. Little FYI.
Jake, let me tickle your wrestling encyclopedia part of your brain for a second.
Actually, this is my encyclopedia balls, which is what you'd be tickling, but continue.
In the Rolodex, what is the earliest instance you can think of a wrestler buying a ticket to a show to get around a loophole of being banned, suspended, fired?
That is a good question. It's never affected me so much like, oh, this is a really ingenious angle. Maybe because I've seen it, I don't know, 157 times. Gosh, I mean, this is one of them, but I think WCW did it a couple of other times before. Oh, no, I know. Fucking ECW. Ooh. Sitting front row for King of the Ring.
Yeah.
I remember seeing a little bit of that pay-per-view and that being like kind of a big deal. I definitely remember bits and pieces of that growing up. And like, what the fuck is going on? Like, I didn't even know there were wrestlers. Mm. I just knew they weren't fans and they held up their tickets. And I think that would have been 1995, so that predated this.
After a awesome Rey Mysterio and Dean Malenko highlight reel, Hall and Nash have managed to grab a mic, and they're walking towards the commentary set, and also the stage, I guess. They're confronted by cops, Lex, Macho, Sting, and the whole WCW locker room, which adds a whole new element to this, because this is Hills, Faces, all bonded together to try and stop the invaders.
It's like when everybody ganged up to beat up the guy that tackled Bret Hart at the Hall of Fame speech.
And that takes us to 1996, Bash at the Beach, the greatest night in the history of our sport, where in the main event, the Outsiders and a mystery partner would take on Sting, Luger, and Macho. Set the mood, we get like the most 90s promo recap ever before Hall and Nash step out in their brand new wrestling gear, which is basically their old wrestling gear but red and black. Next down the aisles, Mean Gene. He asks where the third man is. They say he's here and he's ready. So Lex, Sting, and Macho come out, a team of men who were all pitched to be the third man backstage, and maybe Sting to like a lesser extent, but all three of these guys to the viewers, they're the most likely case to like swerve bro us and join the Outsiders. You see, at the time, Hulk Hogan was this mustard bottle looking ass motherfucker, and the Southern people did not understand this. That, mixed with him being the same character for, I don't know, 12 years, was starting to, you know, temper Hulk's crowd reactions. But in no world would Hulk Hogan, the cash cow, movie star, sick kid hugging, shining example of a squeaky clean babyface, ever turn heel.
In no world, Nick? What if there's a new world?
Jesus Christ.
I was hoping there'd be a little bit more of a laughter for that joke, and I was giving Tyler some time, but sorry, it just didn't show up. The laughter didn't arrive, Tyler. I know you just put an order in for it. Sorry, Amazon's not delivering at this hour.
Whose humor are you on anyway, Jake? All right, I'm done.
All right, cool. All right, yeah. Goodbye. Tyler's done. That's fine. You don't know anything about any of this. You were two when this all happened. So we got, me and Nick got this. We actually lived this. Let the two veterans tell you about Vietnam. You know, I don't know, maybe because I'm a 14-year-old kid at this time. Everybody wants to talk about like, oh, Hulkamania just was kind of dead and nobody cared for it. I call bullshit. Like, Hulk still like was cool to me. It was amazing. Now, granted, he needed a facelift and this was it. Hulk was still big with me, so that way when he turned, it affected me a lot. Like, what?
Yeah.
Like, to say, like, oh, the fans are already booing him, so we just went ahead and turned him heel. That is WWE propaganda. There were still a large amount of people that loved Hulk Hogan, loved him coming out, tearing his t-shirt, beating up Vader to save that rec center on Baywatch. Like, we all loved Hulk Hogan and cheered for him just as we did when we were 8, 6, 4 years old. However old we were when that Hulkamania run was going on, we still loved him. Even at 14, 15, still enjoyed him. So when he turned, it was a big deal. Like, a very big deal. It affected me emotionally. It was like a funeral because it felt like my childhood had died. That's exactly what it felt like, and that's how much the NWO and Hulk Hogan joining him affected me. And man, hearing all the other like possible things that were going to happen if Hulk didn't go for it, like, I'm really glad we got this version of history, because it is far better and it is unbelievable, and it was shocking. And also too, like, you kind of forgotten about Hulk because he kind of had been away for a while. So you kind of forgot Hulk was even a part of WCW because, you know, WCW is doing this big fight and you think Hulk's going to be involved, but you never think about Hulk being involved. You never think about him. And yeah, like, this was a big deal. I feel like this is the day that I stopped being a child. As dramatic as that sounds, Hulk Hogan turning heel, I feel like that was the end of my childhood.
So Scott Hall starts this match out against Lex Luger. So Hall's the first NWO member to get official ring time. After about 70 seconds, Nash catches Lex in the corner before Stinger comes in with a splash, accidentally hitting and KOing Luger. This kind of sets the stage for how every single moment of this match is going to be kind of dramatic, because did Sting do it on purpose? Is Lex going to run back in and attack WCW? Sting ends up working the bulk of the match before he gets the hot tag to Macho Man. Macho comes in, he cleans house before he gets a low blow from Kevin Nash. Then, out comes a man who always puts a hard R on Stinger, Hulk Hogan. And every living creature, aside from Bobby Heenan, is thinking he's coming out to save the day because he just saw the Outsiders cheat to get the upper hand on best pal Randy Savage. But then, in the single biggest moment in professional wrestling history, Hulk Hogan hits the ropes, leg drops Macho Man, revealing himself as the third man, thus betraying WCW, and through the squiggly lines of an unpurchased pay-per-view, a 9-year-old Nick Alexander cried his fucking eyes out.
And he gave the goofiest double thumbs up in the history of the world. Like, oh, look, ah, oh, thumbs up, see what I did, like.
That makes me like it so much more to know that Hulk Hogan's mocking children that are crying.
He turns heel, like, he goes for it.
For somebody who's really reluctant about it, boy, did he have a lot of joy when he did it, like.
Then comes the Hogan promo as Nash and Hall stand right beside him. And the best villains are the ones that think they're right. And I would say almost everything in this promo is true, definitely from Hulk's perspective. And, you know, all these fans can stick it, brother.
They were throwing trash, too. That's something that, like, it didn't happen all the time, did it? Like, it was really just, like, special moments in like the big companies, and then in Mexico all the time.
I mean, they threw trash at Andre going to WrestleMania 3. I mean, there were occasions, and I'm sure back in the territory days, but also too, we're not far removed from like chairs being thrown in the ring at the behest of Terry Funk waving them in. But that's just like sheer emotion and people just being fucking mad. You rarely saw that, but then you would see it on Nitro just about every week from here going forward.
I wanted to kind of try to put this into perspective for Tyler, but there is nothing in your entire wrestling life that could possibly compare to this. I think at this point, if Cena turned heel, it's like he's been in doing movies and shit too long for it to be like quite this dramatic. Mm-hmm. We would have to start building now for like the next decade to have something that could possibly even kind of match this. And with the way kayfabe and yada yada is now, there's just nothing that could happen to replicate what this felt like.
Yeah, the closest thing that I can think of just as a small blip, it was cool for 3 weeks, was the pipe bomb in 2011 by CM Punk. It blurred the lines, yeah. And it was like really exciting. It's like, oh my God, what's real? What's going to happen next? They immediately fuck it up. So who knows if it would have actually gone into a multi-year, you know, gem of wrestling history. Most likely not. But like, yeah, I think that's the closest thing. And it's not even him turning heel. It's just like blurring the lines.
The next night on Nitro, Hall and Nash roll up in a limo to disrupt a Sting versus AA match before getting pushed back by security. Sting speaks with Mean Gene and rebukes Hulk Hogan's wish for fans to stick it by suggesting that it is in fact Hulk Hogan who should stick it. Macho Man had come out during all the chaos and he tells Hulk Hogan to think of the worst thing he can dream of, multiply it by 9 million, and then multiply that by infinity. And I just quick, if this doesn't work, I'll just edit it out. What do you think is the worst thing Hulk Hogan can dream of?
Oh, probably his daughter dating a black guy, if I had to guess.
Yeah, done. Done. That's the answer. Leave that in there, Nicholas. Don't you balk on it. That's it. That's the answer. That would be it right there.
I regret asking that so much now.
Dude, as soon as you brought it up, I started giggling. I'm like, this is great.
After the Sting bit, we go to commercial, and now Mean Gene is interviewing Nash and Hall, who do a little promo. Hogan isn't there. And the follow-up show is pretty uneventful, considering we just had the fucking moon landing of pro wrestling. Both are fake. Stay woke, y'all. July 15th, Hall is there, and of course so is Nash, and they cover up the giant WCW letters surrounding Disney MGM set. They cover them up with, like, I guess, bed sheets, tarps that read NWO. Later that night, after Big Bubba and Lex Luger's main event, Hall and Nash come down to the ring. They attack Lex, and then bad guy Hulk Hogan comes to the ring wearing all black, including some Instagram thought leggings that made him look thick as hell. Hulk cuts another promo, most importantly, challenging the Giant for the heavyweight title. July 22nd, Nitro, Hall and Nash come by to fuck with the production team, which seems kind of like whatever by today's standards, but they're showing that they're going to fuck with WCW on all levels. And at the time, like, shit like this didn't happen. They never pulled the curtain back that far. So storytelling-wise, this is all pushing the envelope further than it's ever been pushed before. Then we get to July 29th, 96, the greatest night in the history of our sport, for a WCW taping at Disney MGM once again during a match with Horseman versus Macho, Sting, and Lex. Jimmy Hart runs down to grab a cameraman and begs the faces to come backstage where all hell is broken loose.
We need a camera in the back, baby. Baby, we need to get the camera. Get the guy with the cables, with the camera and the camera. And I need to come on back with me, baby. Come on, all the way back. Down a bit long hallway. Go take a left. Go take another left. Go take a right. A sharp right. You're going to go through a door. But don't go through the second door, baby. I know. Don't go. I know you want to go through that second door, baby. But you don't go through that second door, baby. You got to go to the next one. Next one now, baby. Come on. We're going to need this back. We need all the good guys. Bad guys. I don't care. We'll get any guys. Get some dogs. Can bring some dogs back here so I can pet a few dogs. I'm saying, Jimmy Hardy loves animals. I'm just saying. You can check out my new Jimmy Hart Alpo dog food. It'll be the best Jimmy Hart style Alpo dog food. Your dog will be, woo, doing laps, baby. That's right. Come on back with me. I need a cameraman, baby. Come on, baby.
Dusty Rhodes is on coke tonight, huh?
That's just my Jimmy Hart impersonation, is just Dusty Rhodes on coke. Like, you got to speed it up as fast as possible and just say baby a lot.
Yeah, you replace daddy with baby. We got it cooking.
So backstage, Nash and Hall have laid people out with baseball bats, starting out with Bagwell and Arn Anderson. And yes, this is the famous spot where Ray dives off the trailer, Kevin Nash catches him, and King Leonidas spears his ass into the side. Hall and Nash get in their limo, Savage dives on top of it as it drives away. While Rey Mysterio is selling and getting put on the stretcher, he's telling everyone there's another guy, setting up that there's a new member. I saw this episode live, and I have never forgotten a second of it. This wasn't, like, good for pro wrestling. This is, like, great TV. Like, compare it to fucking anything. The medics took Rey Mysterio Jr.'s fucking mask off. Like, that was so mind-blowing. And people in Florida were calling 911 after they looked up the number in the phone book. Hey, suck it, Florida. And then Disney even called to scold WCW for putting on a shoot match where people got hurt for real on their property.
Oh, man, they're making money. This is good.
When I was in college, I hung out with a crew in my broadcasting department. We're huge wrestling fans. I remember my buddy Dave. This is his favorite episode of television ever. And yeah. He, too, can, like, quote all of the lines. And his favorite line, oh, and Ray is, like, going to Eddie Guerrero. He goes, Eddie, my face! And I think it was, like, Mike Tenay goes, and he's a luchador! That's a disrespect! Like, him losing his mask! Like flipping out about it. Like, just going on about it. But just the whole, Eddie, my face! That's all Rey Mysterio has had a Hall of Fame career, and all I can think about every time I see him is, Eddie, my face!
So a little later on the show, we've already touched on Heenan selling this, or it being a shoot. But Heenan crushes the segment where he walks off out of fear. It's really good. Just putting that little extra touch on how dangerous and how real this situation is. Then later, our ears get blessed with that sweet NWO theme for the first time as we get our first paid announcement from the NWO. And apparently they wanted the music to sound like Hendrix. And we all know Hogan walked out to Voodoo Child. So the staff of WCW heard Hendrix, wah pedal, done. And we all know and love the NWO theme. But if you talk about a theme, an intro song that completes the vibe and the package of like a pro wrestler, it doesn't get much better than this.
You pair that up with the filters that they had on the cameras too for black and white. It's fucking awesome. It's great, great setting.
I can't believe Ted went cheap on this. He could have just bought Hendrix and just had that playing over and over again. I mean, that's what would have done at AEW. Just buy the license for it and we'd play it every week. I mean, Jimi Hendrix licensed to his music. That can't be too expensive. I mean, come on, Ted. Why are you being so tight with those purse strings?
From here, Hall and Nash, they're going to hop on to the WCW house circuit. They're facing Sting and Luger. But the next actual match for the Outsiders would be August 10th, 1996 at Hogwild. Crazy ending to this match. Sting gets Nash out on the outside. He puts him in the Scorpion Deathlock. That leaves Hall and Lex going one-on-one in the ring. Lex expresses Hall into the torture rack. There's a fucky finish with ref Nick Patrick, who kind of gets bumped by Hall while he was in the torture rack, but he falls and clips Lex Luger's knee. Then Hall gets the cover, and Patrick does like a super fast 1-2-3. So it looks like the NWO has bought off an official to fix the outcome, a strategy usually reserved for NBA referees.
Most specifically, Scott Foster.
Yes.
if we are naming names, Scott Foster.
That was such a shitty bump. Like, it looked so bad. It took him a minute and a half to fall and chop block him. It was bad.
Yeah, it looked rough.
Yeah, and his dad's a great wrestler. Nick Patrick's dad, Jody Hamilton, the assassin, if you're not educated. Like Tyler, who went, ooh, when I said that fact, as if he knew who the fucking assassin was.
Jake, it's called engage listening, and I do it to be polite.
So the next match on this Hogwild pay-per-view is the Giant versus Hogan for the WCW title. This is the first match you get to see Hogan introduced and walk out as a heel, the first one since like 1980. So Scott and Nash come out to help fuck over the Giant. Hogan wins the world title, and this is when he spray paints NWO on the big gold belt. On August 12th, Nitro, the big main and the medium-sized main make their in-ring Nitro debut when they take on Sting and Luger in the main event. After earlier teasing that people still don't know who the fourth and fifth members of the NWO are, this match is very chaotic with Hall and Nash getting the win after some more Nick Patrick fuckery. So it kind of looks like Nick is, you know, part of NWO here. Then the Hill Horsemen come out in support of Faces Sting and Luger. So, you know, WCW's banding together to continue this WCW-NWO war.
Well, I just want you to understand, Sting. We're not on the same side most of the times. But on this time, your side is my side. Our side is for WCW. They're on my paycheck.
I will go home and feed my family with that paycheck, and I need that paycheck to always say WCW, not NWO. That is why I'm on your side. I will fight for you. My tire iron will fight for you, and I will just wave it around willy-nilly at anybody that gets in our way who's wearing black and white, so you stay wearing your fuchsia unless you want to get hit with this tire iron. Simple rules. Four horsemen. For life.
Fuck black and white. We're taking out the Phantasmo guy. We're taking out Kiss Demon. We're taking all of them out. Fuck them. What was that? What was the magician's name? They had the weird mask and like took it off.
El Phantasmo.
Yeah.
El Phantasmo.
Yeah.
You know El Phantasmo, but you can't name multiple members of the NWO.
I like what I like, Jake. I'm sorry.
You are everything I hate about wrestling. Hey. All rolling into a flesh bag.
In a world where wrestling fans are born after 1996 or some shit.
You don't remember the slogan of WCW
remember
in the late
90s? Remember the slogan,
90s?
Jake? I was five.
One man will be brave enough to face them.
You never saw the... Jesus Christ.
Starring the Man Scout, Jake Manning.
You son of a bitch. This is why I hate you so much.
And introducing Tyler Wood.
Oh, boy.
With special guest, Nick Alexander.
Oh, yay. I never get an intro, so that's nice. That felt nice.
10 Bell Pod, the Patreon.
Who gives a shit about Lex Luger? New World Order! New World Order!
From here, it's run-ins, usually in the main event match, and while it does get a little silly after run-in 387, here it's still pretty cool, it's still drawing massive heat, and it's still moving the storyline forward. They're fucking people up, they're spray-painting them, they're taking over commentary sets, then they start adding some members, including Sting! But was it fake Sting? Was it the real Sting? Is the meaning of the real Sting relative or subjective? Is the belief that the man under the paint is Sting enough to make him the real Sting? And if not, should the question not be, who is the real Steve Borden? We would get our answers at 96 Fall Brawl, kind of.
Nick, you're going way too far into this. Really, the only question you should be asking is, does Vince McMahon own the Sting character? And at this point, probably, sure.
At 96 Fall Brawl, Scott, Nash, Hogan, and A Sting took on Flair, Luger, Arn, and another Sting. Arn and Hall start off this match, so this is Scott stepping into a WCW cage for the first time since Chamber of Horrors. And who wins the coin flip, Jake?
To get the advantage, the heels always get the advantage.
There you go. So backtracking some, the NWO had a fake Sting played by Jeff Farmer.
Boy, did I remember falling for this like hard. Like I really thought it was Sting because Sting had growing his hair out. Going into the pay-per-view, I wasn't 100% sure. They shot it in just a way that made you question everything.
So this version of A Sting would turn on Lex on Nitro while the real Sting was not there. So WCW, the roster bought it. They thought it was Sting. Sting found out about this and he was very insulted by it. So at the War Game match, the real Stinger comes in, lays out the NWO, goes, fuck you, and then leaves the match, thus leaving WCW a man down. So the NWO would win, funny enough, with the fake Stinger and Hogan making Luger tap. Nash, I think, was supposed to be there stomping on him, but his foot got tangled in the cameraman's cords. Probably the only time he's never not been cool in his whole life. The next night, on September 16th, Nitro, Sting cuts a promo explaining, you know, all his feelings. He says he's leaving for a while. He drives straight to a Hot Topic, and he'll be back after some dates in Japan as Crow Sting, or as I like to call him, Emo Sting.
And that Crow Sting, that whole design and that look, you can thank Scott Hall. He was the one that suggested to Sting, you know, hey, have you ever seen the movie The Crow? You know, maybe do that with your paint. Like, you know, it's one way to freshen it up. So this thing that you see on television, even today with the white and black paint and all that aesthetic, you can thank Scott Hall, because it is still present and still lives on today. It's not like Sting's like, you know what, I'm going to go back to Fuchsia. Like, and he might have still just done that. Like, he might have just still done colors or not done something as cool as this that he is still doing today. So I feel like if you talk to, you know, Sting, Steve Borton about it, like, I think he knows that he owes Scott Hall a great debt of gratitude for, you know, breathing new life into this existing character that he's embodied for decades now.
I like to think every time Scott Hall saw a new good movie, he's like, fuck, you guys seen this? Let's make an iconic wrestling character out of this. Did it with Scarface, did it with The Crow. I wonder how many times he's just like seen a movie, pitched it to somebody, and didn't go anywhere. Like, what if we could have had like an Alex Wright, Forrest Gump type of deal? That'd be fun.
Hey, yo, Disco, you ever seen Boondock Saints before?
On this same Nitro, Sean Waltman is in the crowd, and he gets interviewed by Tanay, but later he stands up and he presses this button that makes a bunch of NWO flyers or pamphlets rain down from the sky, signaling that he has joined the NWO. And on commentary, Bischoff is like, what is he, the sixth member? It looks like he's the sixth member. But I say unto thee, Tin Bell Pod listeners, he was in fact not the sixth member. So, Hall was joined by Nash, and then joined by Hogan, that puts us at three. Then came Ted DiBiase, number four, the Giant, number five. If you count Nick Patrick turning on WCW and helping NWO win matches, he's six, but fine, fuck him, I'll give you that one, he doesn't count. The six would then be Fake Sting, making Sean number seven. And if you want to go, only full-time members count, okay? You can take away Fake Sting, but you also have to take away Ted, who had basically done nothing for NWO at this point. Like, if Fake Sting, who had wrestled and won a fucking War Games match, doesn't count, then Ted surely doesn't count. So if you take those two away by your own fucking logic, X-Pac is the fifth member of NWO.
It's like I'm listening to the Scott Steiner math promo.
There's even a shot later on Nitro with Sean with the NWO, and there's seven fucking people on screen, six of them wearing the NWO shirt, and Sean is wearing a Doris shirt as he has not yet broke on through to the other side. So I wanted to clear this up, so I went straight to the fucking source. I sent X-Pac a text message asking him, was he, quote, air quote, was he called six because he was the sixth member? Or was it because, you know, one plus two plus three from 1-2-3 Kid equals six?
May I take a guess at what he texted you back, please?
Yes.
Did he say, Nick, you have to stop doing this?
Please, God, tell me something, because I have been waiting for this whole rant to end with Nick shoehorning again in that he is friends with X-Pac. Like, that is, I've been waiting for this. I'm like, here we are. And now we've got to the punchline. But thank you, Tyler. That was the same thought I had.
Let the court show that I directly quote a text from May 12th, 6:34 p.m. that states, I still don't know for sure. Eric has never answered that. It's almost like he doesn't know either. So who fucking knows? But Sean starts going by six and of course gets into a feud right away with seven because he ate nine.
Oh boy.
Now we see where you really where the punchline is. I thought it was like 10 seconds earlier. Stan corrected. That's all this was for that.
We have fun here.
Clearly, some of us do.
Are you convincing us or yourself?
Hall, now having two of his best friends and click buddies, would do a run-in the next week on the Nacho Man. They fuck Randy all up. A razor's edge, a jackknife powerbomb. Hogan comes in and whips Macho Man with a Slim Jim, which is objectively hilarious. Miss Elizabeth has kind of like half joined, half been abducted by the NWO at this point. And then we get also another new member, Vincent, which is obviously a play on Vince from a guy who was named Virgil, a play on Dusty. Change your name to Tony on Twitter and get that fuck money, Virgil. Anyways, this Nitro is just a complete takeover by the NWO. They're destroying shit, spray painting shit. Hall and Nash would wrestle what was essentially a 10-minute squash match against High Voltage. They got no offense in. Then on the build to October 27, 96, Halloween Havoc. The Outsiders and Harlem Heat would start working out some new material on house shows before they met at Season 8's Halloween Havoc to wrestle for the tag team titles in Las Vegas.
So I skimmed over this match, Halloween Havoc 96. Good Lord, can someone help me out with Colonel Parker? And like, what the fuck is going on with him and Cherry and like what the deal is?
All right, let's get into uncomfortable wrestling history, ladies and gentlemen.
He's racist, right? So, like, that's...
Yeah, okay. He's Foghorn Leghorner. Like, he's Vince's favorite wrestler.
Vince, not Vincent, right?
Yeah. So, Sherry Martel was Sister Sherry with Harlem Heat. Mm-hmm. Colonel Robert Parker, Colonel as in kind of like the Colonel who also exploited Elvis Presley.
Okay.
I believe that was Colonel, forget what his name, unimportant. They did a movie recently with the guy who did Moulin Rouge. Go watch it or not. I could give a fuck less. Colonel Robert Parker was managing Dirty Dick Slater, Garbage Bag Human Being, and then Bunkhouse Buck. And they had a match where I think it was like one of those things where Sherry had to end up with Robert Parker, you know, using a woman as a piece of property. Mm-hmm. And I think they hooked up and she liked it because that's how relationships work, according to professional wrestling. And then thus, like, now they were an item and clearly Robert Parker was using Sherry to, like, get in with Harlem Heat, who is a better team than his team. I think it's kind of what they were going for. It's all uncomfortable. It was all weird. It was all angles that were happening on WCW Saturday Night deals. I don't remember all of the details, but I remember that kind of being the thing. You had this weird love affair with Colonel Robert Parker and Sister Sherry that happened with a match where she had to come involved with him for whatever reason.
Sorry for the sidetrack there. It's just like that's not something that I have ever heard before. I would probably never hear about again. And to like, I'm doing research for Scott Hall, NWO, one of the biggest things ever. And I see those two together. I'm like, Jesus Christ. All right, guys, help with this. You tell me this is the best time for wrestling in the history of it. And you tell me what the fuck is going on with this old Colonel and Sister Sherry, which also sounds problematic, but we don't have time. On to the match, Nick. We don't have time.
But at the same time, too, let's take a quick second because this highlights how weird WCW was at this time. And this is what I tried to get you to do in this Patreon episode, is to talk about all the weird shit that was happening in WCW. The big angle with the WCW tag titles was like this weird, like hot potato thing going on with Harlem Heat, the Nasty Boys, the Blue Bloods, and Dirty Dick Slater and Buckhouse Buck, and the American Males mixed into it. Those were the premier teams. They were bouncing around. They had issues with each other. You had like four corner tag team matches with all of these guys, and they were basically hot potatoing the tag team belts around. And they had, you know, managers and different dynamics and defined characters and who they were. And they interacted with each other in goofy wrestling ways, which I loved this whole time. This is fantastic. And now you have these guys using their shoot names coming in with this very realistic angle that people are buying hook, line, and sinker. And we're going to put the belts on them and they're going to reside on them forever because nobody's going to match them in Heat or anything, you know, even Harlem Heat, when Heat is in their name, and match them in coolness or overness. So they're gonna live with these belts for quite some time.
Underrated match, I think, that gets kind of lost in the NWO, you know, stuff. Harlem Heat's great, Hall and Nash are great. It's a fun match, but yeah, the Outsiders are gonna win the tag titles when they hit Stevie Ray with old Colonel Parker's cane. Then we get to World War III. Tyler, have you ever seen a World War III?
I watched most of this one. What a fucking mess.
Yeah, okay. I always loved it because I always loved the Royal Rumble. And then this is three Royal Rumbles.
This is three times better. What are you talking about? Just you wait until AEW does it. I can't wait. Like,
it's really good that I got a chance to understand all the facets of everything that was going on in all three rings at the same time.
Okay, so as we march towards World War III, Hall and Nash try to recruit DDP, but the new big member is Eric Bischoff. Hall and Nash defend the belts at World War III, beating the Nasty Boys and Faces of Fear. Then we get to the big Triple Rumble match. We get down to Lex, Hall, Six, the Giant, and Nash, which, you know, it sucks for Lex. He manages a little comeback before the Giant wins.
This is something I actually saw this week, oddly enough, that Mr. Show was talking about when it came to him working with the NWO and Hulk Hogan. And he had been doing some, like, moonsaults before this. And apparently, like, when he got involved with the NWO, basically Hogan was like, hey, motherfucker, Giants don't do moonsaults. You quit that shit right now. You never draw another dime.
He was so athletic for the size he was. Mm-hmm. He did some of the craziest shit for a man that size. WCW Giant is awesome, man.
I prefer the AEW one that tries to run Jake over with a car.
Yeah, that man. That man probably wishes he didn't do any moonsaults whatsoever at this moment in time. But here's the thing, though. If he would have got to do some of the things he would have done, like you see people go gaga over Keith Lee. Keith Lee would have like held a candle to young Paul White doing tackle, drop down, leapfrog, get it again, arm drag, a moonsault, you know, like.
Following World War III, Buff Bagwell joins the NWO, just to let you know. Meanwhile, Hall and Nash start focusing in on Ming and Barbarian, which is just straight up exposing the business. Even the most irrational of people wouldn't pick a fight with fucking Ming and Barbarian. Come on. December 2nd, Hall and Nash and now NWO Bischoff take over the commentary set a little over halfway through the show. So if you want to hear Hall call some matches, pretty good place to do it. Then we get to Starrcade 96, where Scott and Kev would face the Faces of Fear for the tag belts. It's a fairly clean win with Nash powerbombing Barbarian. And this is a good spot. We're about, you know, 6 months into the feud. But you can really see this evil, insidious Hill faction starting to get really over and cheered. There's like a legit babyface pop at the end of this match. The crowd is just littered with NWO shirts, which is very similar to the Razor Ramon thing where, yeah, you're the bad guy, but you're so fucking cool. Did you at any point like them, Jake? Like, did you start to turn? I was still too much of a kid.
Yeah, I was too much of a kid too, because I remember like there was that cup of coffee or a Luger won the world title in the midst of like NWO being the hottest ever. And I remember being like super happy and like, yeah, Lex Luger's the coolest because he beat Hulk Hogan for the belt for like a few weeks or something like that. And yeah, I was very much a kid. I didn't like him. I don't know if I liked them even. I don't think it wasn't even to the Wolfpack. I think when that was around, but just because that the entrance song.
Like, yes,
if you don't have that you know Wolfpack entrance song, I probably would still to this day hate every aspect of the NWO.
So up until this point, like was this the death of like the last true heels? Because they come in NWO super popular, and they do that thing you're never supposed to be able to do as a true heel, and they make a fuck ton of money on merch.
Not just them. I think it was Vince's counter to them, Stone Cold, that killed it forever. Like, Stone Cold is literally fucking stunning authority figures. Him and Rock, I think it was their answer with the NWO that totally just wiped away, like, the white meat, happy-dappy fucking baby face. Yeah,
but then there was also guys that really liked Ric Flair when he was clearly the bad guy for years. Like,
that's true.
There's a bunch of 65-year-old men or, like, late 50 guys like, oh, Ric Flair's the coolest, and they just sit there and they watch Ric Flair YouTube promos and say he's the coolest guy ever, man, I'd love to go have a beer with him. And I'm like, yeah, I wish you would have a beer with him. And then when Ric Flair's like, hey, tell you what, if you just loan me $10,000, I'll let you own the rights to the Woo, because I don't know if you know that or not, I own the rights to the Woo. So tell you what, just give me $10,000, and if I don't pay you by, I don't know, December, then you can own the Woo, no problem. You loan him $10,000, he doesn't return your text messages, you'd be like, hey, it's January, I own the Woo now. And he goes, fuck you, no you don't talk to me, or else at least you want to talk to my lawyer. And then you're out $10,000. You know, there's those people that really, you know, love Ric Flair when he's clearly the bad guy.
Did Ric Flair go on a bender with like the president of the Carolina Hurricanes or something, because they use that Woo a lot?
Maybe that's the guy that actually owns it, to be really quite honest. Well, Stu, I've got some interesting tax information about Ric Flair. Ooh. If any actual journalist wants to talk to me, I'll expose the whole government of North Carolina at some point in time.
If you guys want to see those exclusive legal documents, join our Patreon, 10 Bell Pod.
Wrapping up 1996, it's a bunch of more house show spots, some nitros heading into 97, and NWO sold out an entirely NWO themed premium live event. And this is like a phase of a bigger plan that was eventually supposed to turn the NWO into just its very own brand, totally separate from WCW. And by now, NWO has recruited Masahiro Chono, Big Bubba, Michael Wall Street, Scott Norton. So they're like well on the way to having their own roster too.
It's cool to think about too that NWO was such a cool thing that everybody wanted to and nearly everybody did join it. I can imagine it stretching out to the whole world. And like they're doing it through Dennis Rodman and like other real people. They had a fucking NASCAR driver for a while in there. It is fun to think about it stretching its tentacles out into the real world.
It's also even fascinating that, you know, they were picking up all these members and, as you said, reaching out to different people. So their membership was growing in the dozens upon dozens upon dozens. But the Tyler just can't name more members of the NWO than the Nexus, which had a very finite amount of members. But you can name every one of those. Actually, you can name more members of the Nexus than you can the NWO, whose tentacles had spread across pop culture, as you even said. And you just drew a blank when it came time to name more of them than the Nexus. So just wanted to remind people that that's something that happened on Patreon. If you haven't been listening.
Good point, Jake. I agree.
They also like franchised it out to Japan. So there was like a whole other wing of NWO in Japan. They were like expanding like a fucking chain restaurant or something.
Well, like I said, some of the stuff you hear about Eric Bischoff and like somebody owned the license to NWO Japan and had the rights to produce them there. I'm sure WCW got some sort of agreement, but they worked out it with some individual there as somebody who works for AEW merch, like, and dealing with a New Japan show, like dealing with them in merchandise. It's very difficult to do business with them, especially, you know, if you start talking about like Bullet Club, anything, like, because we just had a Chicago Bullet Club shirt at Forbidden Door. Like they're very particular and protective and very interested in what we were doing with that logo. So like it's funny that they have this entity of Bullet Club, which is basically kind of what NWO was. So it's like the tables have now turned. They were bent over a barrel with NWO, and now all of a sudden they're like taking all that information and being on the other side of a deal and then putting somebody else over it with the Bullet Club.
So at Sold Out, the Outsiders would take on the Steiners, and another crazy ending to a match. Nick Patrick takes a ref bump. Scott Hall razor edges Scott Steiner, but there's no ref, so Dogface comes off the top, pops Scott, puts his brother on top for the cover, and then WCW referee Randy Anderson comes out of the crowd, hits the 1-2-3, and the Outsiders lose their tag titles. But Bischoff would reverse the decision the next Nitro, saying that Randy wasn't the assigned ref, so the Outsiders are still tag champs as we go towards Super Brawl 7. At Super Brawl 7, the Outsiders were taking on the Giant and Lex Luger, but Luger's arm was in a cast after getting attacked by the Outsiders, so he was banned from the match. However, he runs in towards the end of the match. He makes Nash tap with the torture rack. Also later that night, Macho Man joins NWO, but more tag title fuckery. Bischoff once again gets the titles back for the Outsiders on the following Nitro, saying that Lex was not medically cleared to wrestle. The Giant and Lex agree to give the belts back as long as NWO puts up all their titles at Uncensored, which they agree to, and this leads to just a clusterfuck of a match. Okay, at Uncensored, we have three teams. NWO, Roddy Piper's team, who is in the mix now, and a WCW in a triangle elimination match, where if the NWO doesn't win, they have to return all their titles, and they're also not allowed to wrestle in WCW for 3 years, which in 4 years, no one would be wrestling in WCW. If NWO wins, they get to wrestle for any WCW title anytime. If Piper wins, Hogan must face Piper in a cage. So, we have Hogan, Macho, Nash, Hall, with Dennis Rodman versus Piper, Redacted, Mongo, Double J versus Lex Luger, The Giant, and Scott Steiner, who were playing a man down because the Outsiders had almost murdered the Steiners by running their car off the road. You can be eliminated by pin, sub, or over the top. Everyone comes out at every few minutes like a Royal Rumble. Hall starts with
"He who shall not be named."
Then The Giant, who eliminates himself. Nash eliminates Jeff Jarrett, so process those feelings, Jake. Rodman helps eliminate Piper, an assist if you will. It ends up NWO versus Lex, gets a little comeback in, but, you know, too much. They eventually cheat. Macho Man runs in and hits Lex with a can of spray paint and knocks him out for some reason. And then Sting comes down from the ceiling and fucks everyone up, but NWO wins.
Why was there no urgency whenever people were coming down the ramp, it seemed like? Especially Lex, just taking his sweet time. It's not like the company's on the line. Get some pep in your step, you know?
As they were coming out for the match?
Yeah. This is the one where they come out at intervals, right? Yeah.
It's strategy. You know, he can't be eliminated if he's not in the ring.
Fine. Fine.
I'm just saying. That's what it is.
You don't want to get down there and help your guys?
Yeah, no, I see that point too. But no, it's more of a, you know, take my sweet time. Let the NWO beat up Piper's team or whatever.
It's like when Jeff Hardy returned like last year, the year before, one of the 14 times he's returned, he stopped to do his dance on the way down to the ring. It's like, all right, buddy, come on.
Coming this summer, Sting, like you've never seen him before. Emo.
Hulk Hogan made me mad, so I'm gonna go and get my bat. Show him he made me sad. Tell him he's not my real dad.
It's Steve, emo, and live in concert.
In Tommy Wong, ruined my life. So here I am, in black and white. Emo.
Just gonna hide in the ceiling. Check your local listings for Emo Sting.
And then do a match at Starrcade 97. That's not really that good.
So since NWO won it uncensored, Scott and Kev kept their tag team titles. They would stop by 97 Slamboree to lose a six-man to Flair, Piper, and Kevin Green that we talked about on KG's episode. The Outsiders are going to have a nice little run with the tag titles. They'll run through some Nitro, some house shows. They stopped at Great American Bash to beat Flair and Piper. Then we get to Bash at the Beach 97, so officially 1 year of NWO. There, Scott and Macho Man would face DDP and a mystery partner, old pal Kurt Hennig of episode 1 of Scott Hall and Mr. Perfect fame. And he was making his WCW in-ring debut. It's really fun to see them, you know, work against each other. There's a toothpick versus gum exchange that's so, like, instant. You know, they obviously have, like, good chemistry together. There's a spot that we get to where DDP accidentally pulls down the rope. I think Kurt was supposed to go over the top, that thing, but he actually just hits the rope, which looked like painful. But he gets mad at Dallas, hits him, leaves, and then the Outsiders get the win. From here, we'd head back to Sturgis, which is now Road Wild instead of Hog Wild. There, Hall and Nash took a DQ loss to the Steiners, keeping the belts, of course. Hall and Savage would take a loss at Fall Brawl to DDP and Lex, no belts on the line. But the Outsiders did use the Freebird rule with the tag titles, which would allow six to get in and defend the belts here and there, especially once Nash was out for a minute when he had knee surgery. And we've also entered the Wolfpack territory, so six, Hall and Nash are rocking the red and black. But that is actually how they're going to finally lose the tag team titles, October 13th, 97's Nitro, when the Steiners beat them. At Halloween Havoc 97, Scott faced Lex Luger with old AWA mentor Larry Zbysko as special guest ref. He actually beats Lex here. There's some X-Pac interference. So Larry checks the replay, reopens the match. Scott gets hit with the torture rack, and Lex wins.
Man, Larry was just like this weird dude that did color commentary. But like anytime he did any special guest referee thing or his match against Bischoff, it was always like really cool. Like he maximized his time. And like, it's just how like old school Larry is. Like he's not going to do any work unless it really, really, really means something. So like it just the little bit that he did in this angle, like there's some like clear moments where like people lost their fucking mind when Larry Zbyszko did something for WCW. And obviously, you know, the fact of Larry's history with Scott Hall through like their time at AWA, and then also to, I mean, Larry was the guy that suggested for Hall to walk down to the crowd. Like Hall would have walked down the ramp with music and stuff, and he's like, no, you're invading. You should be coming down the ramp. Like that's how you should do it. Yeah, and I think that's why like you always see Larry kind of pop up with this. I think like Hall trusted his opinion and, you know, trusted that he could pull off all of these roles for being the good guy carrying the WCW banner.
At World War III 97, Scott Hall wins the damn thing. There's a little NWO and Hulk Hogan fuckery at the end where Kevin Nash comes down from the ceiling dressed as Sting, and he's fucking clearly not Sting because he's 6'10". He clears the ring with the bat and leaves Scott to win it. NWO comes out to celebrate, and by now they've added Rick Rude and Conan. But yeah, this is, you know, if this was a Royal Rumble win, I think everyone would be like, oh my God, so, you know, Scott Hall won a Royal Rumble, or Razor, I guess would be. But, you know, the win of World War III, that's pretty cool. Then we get to Starrcade 97 and the greatest night in the history of our sport. So Scott isn't wrestling here, but he's involved, and the effects of this pay-per-view will directly affect him, NWO, and WCW forever. Scott comes down for a promo. He does a little market research by surveying the audience's preference between WCW and NWO. Then he tells the crowd that Nash isn't going to be there. He's supposed to wrestle the Giant, but he had like some fucking crazy heart issue that day or the day before, some around this time. So the Giant comes out and jackknifes Hall to send a message to Kevin. Scott is back later that night for that Eric Bischoff match with Bruno Sammartino protege, the living legend Larry Zbyszko. So this is a thing that we'll get into next episode. If Larry wins, he gets a shot at Scott Hall at Sold Out. If Eric wins, WCW gets taken off the air or something. Fucking who gives a shit. Also, Bret Hart is the special guest referee because why not? Eric and Larry have kind of a fun match, you know, for what it is. Like, again, to Larry's credit, really fucking, like, paces this and calls it well. Like, it's a nice match for Eric, who's not a fucking pro wrestler. Somehow, Larry ends up winning. I think Eric is KO'd. Who gives a shit? So we get to the main event that we have been building towards for a year and a fucking half. Hulk Hogan versus Sting. There's a lot of dumb shit, swervy fuckery here. Just the way it was handled, the way it was executed.
Man, I remember splitting this pay-per-view with my friend Kevin Miller and watching it downstairs with his dad, Bob, who already kind of thought wrestling was a little bit of bullshit. But, like, wrestling got cool again, so he got really invested in it. And, like, we watch it down in his basement, and we're like, man, we're going to see Sting win the world title. Like, it's going to happen. Man, it's going to happen. And like it was set up for it, and it should have just happened right in the middle of the ring, clean. Amen. You know, like it should have been that. And I still don't believe like the thing like, oh, Sting wasn't in it. Like he didn't have his game face on. He seemed out of it. Fuck it. Like just put the belt on him. Just do this one. Just get this one moment right. I don't give a fuck that you think, like, he's not in, his head isn't in the game, brother. We need to, like, sidestep. No, like, you just need to make sure that you make him look good through this fucking match, and this match moment needs to fucking happen. You can fuck him on Monday Nitro all you fucking want 2 weeks from now and take the belt off him, but this moment needs to fucking happen. Regardless, I don't give a fuck what fucking happens. This has to happen because people have invested so much into this storyline at this fucking moment. And then for them not to come all the way through with it and just being 1, 2, 3 clean. Like, I don't give a fuck. I don't care what stories I've heard on it. It doesn't make any fucking, like, I don't care. No, it makes sense. Having just the 1-2-3, have this match, have this release. Like I said, you can fuck him on Nitro 2 weeks later and get the belt off of him if you think his head isn't in the game or whatever reason. And do NWO fuckery 2 weeks from now, not in this moment, not on a pay-per-view, what is your biggest pay-per-view of the year. I can't disagree more with anybody that says otherwise.
Speaking on Sting kind of like being out of this, when he won, he's just like, all right. Like, you'd think it would be more of like a Shawn Michaels holding the belt and crying because he had just beat the NWO after 18 months of hell. But he's just like, okay, won the title. Get the fuck out of here.
But he was emotionless, though. He was kind of like emotionless.
That is true. That's a good
point. So that could have, like, I didn't see it any differently. But, like, it just was like, huh? That's what we did here? Like,
yeah.
I don't know.
All right, so hear me out. This is going to get into fantasy booking territory, so feel free to turn off the show and block us on all forms of social media. Okay, Sting wins clean. None of the Bell and Brett fuckery, just the good guys win after 18 months of not. You take Hogan, Hall, and Nash off TV, give them 3 months of fucking vacation, they earned it. Let the fans miss them for a second. Then, and hear me out, you don't make Bret Hart a fucking referee. You save his debut for him coming out to challenge new champion Sting. A battle of the sharpshooters, 90s dream feud, and a feud that Vince could never pull off on WWF TV because Sting and Bret refused to work for him at this time. He can even be NWO if you want. Like, Hogan, Hall, and Nash couldn't get the job done, so me and, I don't know, Anvil will handle it. Then you have this internal conflict with the NWO following their new boss, and then the OGs come back, and you can feud over the power of the NWO. So you get to keep your fucking NWO storyline, albeit still too long. But it's like a fresh look instead of Brett just being, like, the fucking sixth man on the totem pole and no one gives a shit.
Doesn't work for me, brother. Doesn't work for me.
I mean, yeah, it's interesting, but I mean, it's fantasy booking at the end of the day. The reason why it's so amazing when professional wrestling angles come off as well as they do, why that's so amazing is because fucking people have egos and they politic for things to go in their favor when it really needs to not go in their favor at this time. And just fucking attitudes, people not seeing it the way you do, everything. Just fucking everything that makes wrestling, the bigger it gets, not as good sometimes. And like, you see it in WWE all the time. I mean, not pulling the trigger on the right person at the right time. I mean, yeah. That's the thing that gets people to stop watching your program. I mean, and people are like, well, we can't have the fans be happy all the time. Well, we know that. We've been unhappy for 18 months. Mm-hmm. We were supposed to be happy in this moment, and we're not. Mm-hmm. That's why people are mad. It's because they've been waiting for this moment to make them happy, and we didn't get it.
All right. So as we head into 1998, that is where we will pick up on season 3 finale and Scott Hall part 3. Until then, thanks for listening. Find us on social media and Patreon. Jake and Tyler, you guys got anything?
Hey, guys. Thanks for listening. Be sure to drop a 5-star review. Tell all your friends. Make parody songs for us if you feel like it. Photoshop some stuff, you know. Other than that, thanks for listening.
Yeah. You know, make sure you leave a review. That's highly, highly important. It kind of bumps us up a little bit. So if you like what we're doing, we like what we're doing. But we want to know if you like what we're doing. And we need more of you to say that you like what we're doing so we can continue to do it. That's how this works.
All right, for the Man Scout Jake Manning, we are out of here. Tyler Wood, you can go to hell.
See you there.
Eddie, my face.